We're holding on Yud Tes Amud Aleph, the beginning of the third Perek. So now that we talked about the beginning of the procedure of the Sota, now our Perek is going to finish off the offering of Herminta, the bringing, the drinking of the water, and the consequences one way or the other, depending whether she was guilty or not. Actually, the consequences really are going to be dealt with a little more. Well, some of them are going to be dealt with in this parak, some in the next one. The Mishnah says, he would take her mincha from the kfifa mitzvahs. So we learned in the previous parak that the mincha, the sota's mincha of barley flour, to begin with, was brought in a kfifa mitzvahs, in a basket made out of fronds that grow around the palm tree. These growths or whatever that grow around a palm tree. So we said most menachas are usually brought to the bismikdash. All other menachas are brought to the bismikdash in the first place using a metal keli, which conceivably could be used for a kli shardis. This is the only exception where it's brought using a cheap wicker basket. Again, part of the mid idea that we learned back in the first parak that she used or was suspected of having used nice kalim to give food to the boy. Also, instead, her mincha is brought like this in a cheap basket. Anyway, so he takes it out of there. Who's the he? Rashi says it means the husband because only beginning from Kmitza and onward does the Kohen have to do it. Everything up until that point, anybody could do, even if he's a Zor. So therefore, the husband would be the one who takes it out of the basket, the Noisnil, so Kli Sharis, and puts it into a Kli Sharis. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos says that the Yerushalmi implies that no, it would actually be the Kohen that does it. It is true that the Kohen doesn't have to do it. It's true that in principle, anybody could do it. But since anyway the husband has to the Kohen is the one who has to put it into the Kli Sharis, since ideally the Kohen should be taking it and putting it into the Kli Sharis, to hear what he takes it out of her hands anyway. So up until now it's been in her hands, because as we learned in the previous parak, again, we want her to be holding on to it the whole time so as to tire her out. And that way that may induce her to confess that she's guilty. And then that way we don't have to erase Hashem's name and make her go through the whole rest of the procedure. Anyway, so we take it out of the basket that she was holding, and he puts it into a Kli Sharis. Again, according to Rashi, we're saying that the husband would be doing that, and and according to Tosfos, the Kohen would be doing that. Anyway, v'nosnal yada, then he puts the Kli Sharis with the mincha in it back on her hands. Here it's not to tire her out anymore. Here it's because the Torah says that you have to wave it, and that means that she and the Kohen have to wave it together, as we'll learn in the Gemara. So the Kohen maniach yadi mitachter, the Kohen puts his hand underneath hers, or menifa, and he waves it together with her. We'll see in the Gemara how we know that the Kohen and the owner of the Mincha together, in this case, she being the owner of the Mincha, how we know they have to wave it. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that, so what are you saying over here? She's going to be holding on to the basket and he's going to be putting his hands under her and touching it. He's going to be touching a woman's hand. It's not sinistic. So first the Yerushalmi says, okay, you make sure that an old Kohen does it, because an old Kohen is less likely to have a Yetzihara because of that kind of thing. Then the Yerushalmi says, no, even a young Kohen could do it. The fact is it's only a momentary thing, and therefore the Yetzihara won't have such an effect on it. So that's all one possibility. Tosfos Shantz brings another possibility. Maybe when we say the Kohen places his hands underneath hers, we don't mean actually that he has to touch her hands at all. Maybe it doesn't mean that he has to touch her hands at all. Maybe it means she's holding the bottom of the basket and he is or the other way around. He is holding the bottom of the basket and she is holding further up towards the top rim of the basket. So they're not necessarily touching each other at all. anyway, so one way or the other, either she's holding the basket and he's putting his hands under hers, which then you have for, it has to be done momentarily. So therefore, and that's where the way the Torah says to do it. So therefore, that's how it is, even though he's touching her. Or again, maybe the possibility is he's not touching her at all. They're just holding different parts of the basket. Anyway, once they do that, and then they wave it together.
One question. The halacha is very clear. I don't understand why the Gemara is you know, discussing this point. You're not supposed to touch a woman's hand, period.
That is exactly what the Yerushalmi is discussing. That is the Gemara, the Yerushalmi says, isn't it the Ein Adav Kiur? Isn't it an ugly thing to do that? It could lead to hear her. So the first answer is that, that you use an old, in other words, the point is, one way or the other, unless we understand, like Tosfos Shants, that they're actually holding different parts of the keli, the fact is, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, that you have the Kohen has to be doing the waving and the woman has to be doing the waving, and they're doing it together, so somehow or other, they're going to have to touch hands. There's no alternative in it. So how do we do to avoid hear her? So that, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi two possibilities. One is you use an old Kohen. Of course, normally an old Kohen wouldn't be allowed to touch a woman's hand either, but at least this way, it's the least worst alternative. Or the other answer is even a young Kohen, it's only a momentary thing, and therefore, again, it's not so bad. It's similar to what we had in the first perek. We had that the Kohen goes over and rips her clothing and uncovers her hair and so forth. I mean, normally a man wouldn't be allowed to do that to a woman either. So in this case, the Torah says to do it, so it has to be done. The only question is, how do we minimize the hero who are involved? You're right.
Can the Kohen put some gloves?
Can he put it on gloves? No, that would be a chatzitza. Now that you mention it, Tosfos does mention that as a possibility as well. Maniach mapa. The question is maniach mapa. So Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that maniach mapa, he would put a cloth, but the Yerushalmi immediately asks for any chatzitza. Wouldn't that be a chatzitza? That would be a problem. And the answer
the Kohen Gadol got punished for that.
He got punished for that, didn't avoid gloves to do the avoda. That's true, although that's different. There he was doing gloves because he didn't want to get his hands dirty. He was talking about something else. But yeah, it's a fair point. Whatever the case, the point is, in other words, ordinarily, obviously this is not the normal circumstance. So in this case, given that the Torah is saying you have to do that, how do we minimize the hero? So again, we have three possibilities. Either it's an old Kohen, or it's a young Kohen, and it's only momentary, so it's not so bad. Or, as Tosfos Shantz says, maybe indeed you have the whole thing wrong in the first place, and in fact, they're not necessarily touching each other because she's holding the bottom of the back, and she's holding the bottom of the clichardis, and he's holding the rim of it.
We see many places in the Torah with certain mitzvahs, where it's a time being thing where it's a tzivoy. When it's a tzivoy, then Hashem takes away that chance of hero because you're doing a mitzvah. Right. When I tell you what,
well, that's what I was saying before. That's what I was saying a minute ago about ripping her clothes and uncovering her hair and so forth. Where normally a kohen or any yid would have no business doing that either. And here the Torah tells us to do it. We even had back on Daf Ches we had machlokas where Rabbi Yehuda had said that if she's particularly attractive, then you shouldn't be doing those things because you're worried that the young kohenim are going to get too attracted to her, and the chachamim are not even concerned about that. And they say that doesn't matter whether it's young Kohenim, old Kohenim, or whoever. Nevertheless, you still have to do what you have to do because the pasuk says so. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So fine. So they do the hanafa, which, as usual with korbanos, hanafa means molech umevi ma'alu murid. It means you're doing it up and down and side to side. So almost like a lulav almost. Next, hinif, so the kohen and the woman together do the hanafa, the higish, then they do the hagosha, as we learned at the beginning of the previous perek, part of the process of any mincha, is not all menachas have to be waved, but all of them you have to do hagosha, you have to touch it to the corner of the mizbeach, the southwestern corner, we learned. Komatz, then the kohen does the kmitza, the hiktir, and he burns the komatz on the mizbeach, as usual with menachas. And the rest of it can be eaten by the Kohenim, again, like most menachos. Now, what order do you do it in? We learned, we touched on this briefly at the beginning of the previous parak. First, he would give her the drink, then he would offer her mincha, and the drink wouldn't actually start taking effect until the mincha is actually offered. Reb Shimon says the other way around, you would offer the mincha and only then would you give her the drink. Because the pasuk says, and afterwards he should give the woman the drink. So that implies afterwards, only after everything else is done, should he be giving her to drink. So it's a machlokas, but Reb Shimon says, but if he flipped things around and first gave her the drink and then offered the mincha, then Reb Shimon says ksheira, then it would also be kosher. As we'll see in the Gemara further on, what the basis of their machlokas is. There was a very interesting point, by the way. Either way, we're saying that the mincha is part of the procedure. There's an interesting question that's brought up. Now, there's an opinion of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yossi in the Gemara in Zvachim or in Menachos that says, like this, we know the concept of pigul. We know that a kohen who's offering a korban, if he has certain thoughts during any of the four main avodas of the korban, then he makes it pigul, and the korban is not only possible, but anybody who eats it is chayev paris. And Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi holds that applies not only to the kohen, but also to the owner of the korban. So if the owner of the korban were to have in mind that this korban is going to be eaten outside the time for that that's available for that korban, then Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi holds it would become pigul. So Rabbi Yosef Engel, the famous goyin, brings up an interesting point. He says, in that case, then according to that opinion, how would the sota ritual ever work? All she has to do is have in mind about the mincha that it should be pigul, and then nothing will ever happen because the mincha is in a central part of it. So he actually wrote a small sefer called Gvuras Shmonim, where he gives 80 different answers for this one question. So, for example, he starts off with maybe that concept applies. Maybe Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi's opinion would apply only to kodshim kalim, not kodshim kodshim, and a mincha is always kodshim kodshim. Maybe it applies. His second answer is maybe it applies only to the kind of, maybe it only applies to the kind of avoida that the owner conceivably could do, namely the shchita of an animal, because shchita kshera bazar. Maybe it wouldn't apply to the kmitza, which is the first of the four avoidas of a mincha, which all that and all the other avoidas after it can only be done by the kohen.
Animals,
yeah. That's neither here nor there. Pigul applies to Menachos as well. But anyway, he gives 80 different answers for this one question. Yeah, goinish thing, yeah. So the Gemara starts off. Omalei Rabbi Elazar l'Rabbi Yoshia didore. Rabbi Elazar says to Rabbi Yoshia from his generation. And the reason why we have to stress that point, Rashi says, is because there is an earlier Rabbi Yoshia who was one of the later Tanoim. In many places in Shas, you have machlokas between Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonasan, who were among the Tanoim. Now the Gemara is going to have, we're going to have over here that Rabbi Elazar is going to tell him to do something. It wouldn't be respectful for Rabbi Elazar to be speaking to the older Rabbi Yoshia that way. He was old enough to be his Rebbe. So therefore the Gemara has to stress that you should know that Rabbi Yoshia he's speaking to and telling them to do something is his colleague, is the one of his own generation, the one who's more contemporary with him rather than the one who was an old one from the previous generation. Yeah. Anyway. So he tells him, Loi tesev akarach, don't sit on your feet, meaning in other words, don't sit, but stay standing on your feet. Adim afarshis lo lahom milsa, until you explain this matter. Minayin l'mincha soita shetu'una tnufa. How do we know that the mincha of the soita requires tnufa? I said, what do you mean, minolon? V'heinif k'siva. The pasuk explicitly says you should wave it. No, what Rabbi Elazar means is bebailam minolam. How do we know that the owner, in this case the woman, has to be involved in waving it? Maybe it's just the kohen alone, and then we don't have any of the problems that we were discussing before. The answer is Asya Yad Yad Mishlomim. The answer is Rabbi Yoshi explains to him, we learn it by Xena Shava from the word Yad from Shlomim. Here the Pasuk says that the point of the question is, because the Pasuk says, the lokach ha-koyin miyad isha, the koyin should take it from the woman, and he should wave it before Hashem. So maybe it means only the koyin. So the answer is, we're learning a gzera shava from Shlomim. By a Shlomim, it says his hands should bring, and there it talks about the tenufa that you do of the fat of the korban that's to be offered on the mizbeach, plus the chaz of a shoik, which are all waved, and then the fat is burnt on the mizbeach, and the chaz and shoik are given to the kohen. So therefore we learn ma kan koyin aflahalim. So we learn in both directions the gzeir shava ma kan koyin. Just like over here, the koyin is involved because the pasuk says that the koyin takes it from her hand and waves it. Aflahalim koyin, the same way by the shlomim, it also means that the koyin is holding it, which otherwise you wouldn't know because the pasuk only mentions that the owner is waves it. Just like over there, the owner is doing it. Here also, the owner has to be doing it. So therefore, it means both. So ha ketzad. So how do you do it? Koyin maniach yadei tachas yadei abaylim. The koyin puts his hand underneath the owner's hand. Umeinif, and then they wave it. Which, subject to all of the possibilities that we said before, either it means that the owner is actually holding it on his hands, and then the koyin is actually putting his hands under the owner's hands, or it means that the owner is holding it from the bottom, and the koyin is holding it further, and or the other way around. The koyin is holding it from the bottom, and the owner is holding it further up towards the rim.
Remember, we learned that Gemara that's only by a regular person, but a woman doesn't have to know. And we learned that Gemara.
So it's true. The Gemara mentions in Kiddushin that women don't necessarily do tenufa. Yeah. So in that case, then it would only be by the mincha sota that you have this issue of the koyin touching her. Yeah.
Different than, I guess.
Yeah. No, it's not so much that a mincha is different. The mincha sota, yeah, is different. It's different than most others. Yeah. Okay. Next, the Mishnah continues. Hainif v'higish. We said that he waves the korban, then he touches it to the mizbeach. Komatz v'cholo. Then he takes the koymet and offers it. And then the Mishnah continues. Hoya mashka v'achakach makriv es minchasa. First, according to the Tanakhama, he gives her the drink, and then he offers her mincha. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? First, he's offering the mincha. Ha'akriva. You already mentioned in the Mishnah that he offered the mincha. So what are you telling me that first, now, after he gives her the drink, is he offering it? We already said in the Mishnah, v'hikdu. The answer is hachikarmel. You're right. What the Mishnah means is seder menachas ketzad. The general order of the mincha is as follows. It requires hinif behigish komatz vehikter v'ashar nechal akarinim. All of those are parts of the procedure of the mincha. Uvashkog gufa pligi Rav Shimon v'rabbanon. Now, when it comes to somewhere in that process, you also have the giving her to drink. There you have the machlokas of Rav Shimon and the chachamim, whether it comes before offering the mincha or not. In other words, what the Mishnah is doing is, it's not telling us the order. The order of things is only when we have the Machlokas, Reb Shimon, and the Chachamim. First, the Mishnah is telling us, in general, this being a mincha, here are the steps that have to be done with the mincha, ending with that it's being burnt and that the Kohenim eat the rest. Then, somewhere in between there, you have the Meisoter is being given to her to drink. Where does that take place? So Vashko Gufa Pligid of Shimon Rabbanan. So within that, Rav Shimon and the Chachamim are disagreeing whether the drink comes before or after offering the mincha. Did Rabbanan Savri Mashka Vachakach Machrivas Minchasa? So the Chum hold first, you give her the drink, and then you offer her mincha. But Rav Shimon Sava Machrivas Minchasa Vachakach Mashka. Rav Shimon says you do it the other way around. Shinema Vachal Yashke, because the pasuk says, and afterwards he should, and afterwards he gives her to drink. So therefore, Rav Shimon says that implies that drinking takes place before or not before, after everything else.
You don't want to see that if her stomach is going to fall through or not before getting being back of the...
No, the korban we have to be makriv regardless, because once we we're going to talk about on Omid Beis, there can be a time, even after Hashem's name is erased, there can be a time when we don't make her drink, we're going to talk about, which is... If she's moida, that she's tomei, basically. But we'll see also, there's another example as well, but... But whatever the case, the mincha still needs to be offered. And okay, if she says she's tamei, actually, then we're going to learn later on that then what happens is we don't bring the korban mincha after all anymore. But here, you know, until she actually says I'm tamei, the mincha still has to be offered. So yeah, okay. Now, Reb Shimon had said in the Mishnah that if he had given her the drink and then he brought her mincha, then Reb Shimon agrees ksheira, it would be kosher, because even though he says the drinking is supposed to be last, he agrees that if the drinking was done earlier, it is kosher b'diavad, as we're going to learn now in the Gemara. So Tana Rabbanan, now like this, that as the Gemara is going to talk about further down, you have three times in the Torah where it says that he gives her the drink. First, it says that he writes these curses on a scroll and dissolves it in the water and gives her to drink. Then the pasuk continues that he takes the korban mincha and he does tznufa and he offers it to the mizbeach and takes the kmitza, etc. And then he gives her the drink. Then the pasuk continues vehishka samayim. Then he gives her the drink, and if she's guilty, then etc. So three times it mentions the giving her the drink. So vehishka matamud loyma. So what does the pasuk mean by saying the word vehishka when it says so now which vehishka are we talking about? Twice in those psukim it says the word vehishka, and the one in between is va'achal yashka, which is where we said Reb Shimon is learning from that the drinking takes place last. So Rashi says Rashi had a girsa in front of him that said that the Braisa starts by saying what does it mean the Vehishka Basra, the last time, the second time that it says Vehishka? What are we learning from it? Rashi says, I don't like that Girsa, because Braises are almost always written in Lashon Kodesh. A word like Basra, which is Aramaic, doesn't belong in a Braisa. Therefore, Rashi says, we're not talking about the last one. What we mean is that we mean the first, the Braisa is asking, why does it say the first Vehishka before even bringing the Mincha? When it says that he writes the curses and dissolves them and gives the woman the water to drink, and this is before the Mincha was even brought, why is he even mentioning that? That's a point of Rashi. Tosfos, on the other hand, does accept the Girsa that Rashi rejects. And Tosfos says, you're right, the Braisa is not using the word Basra and Kama, because you're right, those are Aramaic words that don't belong in a Braisa. The Gemara is editorializing. When the Gemara brings the Braisa, it says Vehishka, and the Gemara interjects, which Vehishka is the Braisa addressing? Is Basra is the second Vehishka, the one that says, so again, you have the second time it says he offers the mincha and then he gives her to drink, va'achal yashka, which is where Reb Shimon is learning from. And then it says again, v'hishka samayim, he gives her the water to drink. So according to Tosfos, bringing from Rabbeinu Hananel, the Braisa is indeed asking on that second v'hishka, why is it necessary? Once it's said already, he gives her to drink, why does it repeat again and he gives her to drink? So in general, that affects the understanding of the Braisa and the understanding of the Gemara after it. So let's first learn according to Rashi, and afterwards we can talk according to Tosfos. So the Hishka Matamud Lema. So according to Rashi, the question is, why does it say the first time the Hishka, which is long before we're actually giving her to drink? Valik Fanema the Hishka. You have later on, it says So later on, it says Vehishka after he offers the mincha. And that is when you actually do it. Because after all, the pasuk said, Va'acha yashka es isha. Afterwards, you should give her a drink. So it means, it comes to teach us, She'im nimcha ka megillah, that if the megillah has been dissolved, Va'imeres eneni shoysa, and now at this point, she says, I'm not going to drink, but she doesn't actually say, I am tomei, ma'arin oisa, we force her, ma'arin, before we used the expression, my ma'arin oisa, we said like the water gurgles back into her throat and chokes her, and Rashi explained over there that the word ma'arin means like when a person is choking, they make like a sound like ah, 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 which sounds like ar, ar. So here it means also, we force her to choke it down, umashkin oisa ba'al korcha, and we force her to drink whether she likes it or not. Because at this point, Hashem's name has already been erased. And unless she's going to actually say, I am Tomei, then we're going to require her to drink it. which Rashi explains, in other words, that what we're saying, Divrei Rabbi Akiva, that's what Rabbi Akiva said. So Rashi explains what Rabbi Akiva means is like this. It is true that giving her to drink is supposed to be, it is true that the writing of the Megillah should have taken place later. The writing of the Megillah should take place as close as possible to when she's going to drink, so that it doesn't come out that we erased Hashem's name unnecessarily. But let's say that the, so ordinarily the way it would work is that, so ordinarily the way it would work is first we're going to offer the mincha, like Reb Shimon said, and then we're going to give, and then we're going to give her to drink. But even let's say in this case, they did the wrong thing. They wrote the Megillah too early and dissolved it. They dissolved the Megillah too early. Nevertheless, once it's been erased, then if she says, I don't want to drink, then we're still going to force her to drink. At that point, she only has, up until that point, she has three alternatives. She could say, I'll drink and I'll go through with it. She could say, I'm Tomei and therefore there's nothing to do. Or she can say, I won't drink. And then we sort of assume by default as if she's Tomei and we tell her, okay, in that case, you and your husband have to get divorced and you forfeit your ksuba. Now, once the Megillah has been erased, there's only two options left. Either she says she's Tomei or she goes through with it. If she's going to say, I don't want to drink, but she doesn't say, I'm Tomei, that's when we're going to force her. So now Rabbi Akiva is saying, says Rashi, that even though the Kohanim did things out of order, they should have written and erased the Megillah later on in the process. Nevertheless, in this case, because it was already erased, then therefore that's then she loses that option to say anymore any shoysa. At that point, it's either she drinks or she says flat out, I'm Tomei. Yeah. So he says that's what we learned from the Vehishka. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. That's what Rabbi Akiva says. Now again, according to Rashi, Rabbi Akiva is referring to the first Vehishka. So he agrees with Reb Shimon that the drinking takes place after the mincha is offered, and the only machloka says how exactly we're learning it, where Rabbi Akiva is learning it from Rabbi Akiva is learning from the first Vehishka. He's learning that there are times when you force her, and from the other ones we're learning other things, as we're going to go on to say in the Gemara. According to Tosfos, it's the other way around. According to Tosfos, the first one is needed just to tell us that there's going to be a drink that's going to be given to her. The last one, the last time where it says Vehishka, is what Rabbi Akiva is referring to, that there we learn that there are times when we force her to drink, which it comes out then, according to Tosfos, Rabbi Akiva holds like the Chachamim, that in fact, you don't do the mincha and then the drink, you do first the drink, then the mincha. And therefore, he's taking the last Vehishka and using it for a different purpose to teach us that there are times when we force her. So in other words, according to Rashi, Rabbi Akiva basically agrees with Reb Shimon as far as the order of things. According to Tosfos, he's agreeing with the Chachamim as far as the order of things.
Both?
No, it's one or the other, right, depending whether you follow Rashi or Tosfos. Yeah. Reb Shimon Omer, then Reb Shimon continues and says, we have to learn like this. When it says Va'acha Yashke Matam Leimer, why does it say Va'acha Yashke, which is the second time it mentions giving her the drink? Va'alek Va'nema Vehishka, you already have the word Vehishka, which means, and according to Rashi, we're talking about the last Vehishka, which is after the Korban Mincha. Rather, Ella, from this we learn, La'acha Kolamaisim Kula Hamor L'mayla, it teaches us that the drinking takes place after everything else that was done. Magid Shloshet Varim Ma'akvin Ba. So therefore, we learn, therefore we learn that there are three things that are ma'akiv in her, that the water only works only if there are going to be three things. Actually, korav ha-koymet, number one, the koymet has to have been offered on the mizbeach. But actually, nimchak ha-megillah, number two, the megillah has to have been dissolved. But actually, to kabbal alei ha-shavua, and that she has to have accepted on herself the shavua. Maybe it means that she has to say omen omen, maybe not. I mean, I guess you could say if she doesn't say omen omen, then we say, okay, in that case, then look, you know, this is before we've written the scroll, fine, you still have the option to say I'm not going to drink, and then that's it, we stop the procedure right there. Anyway so Reb Shimon is learning that from the Va'achar. So the Gemara says one, so let's figure out these three things that Reb Shimon is saying. Do we need to actually say all these three things? Adshle korav akoyvitz, the first one that he says, that the word that you can't give her the drink until the koimetz is offered, well then fine. Reb Shimon l'taymei, amar makir v'smenchasa v'achakach mashka. So Reb Shimon is going to, according to his svara, that says that that you only give her the drink only after the mincha is brought. According to the chachamim, you can learn that way because according to them, the mincha is brought after the drink. What about Abshala Nimchaka Megillah? We're saying a second thing that's essential in order for her to be able to drink is for the Megillah to be erased. Well, the Gemara says, Alamai Mashkala. Of course it has to be erased. What else is he going to give her to drink? That's part of the drink. The answer is, Amar Avashi, the Nitzrucha L'shuri Shumay Nikr. Yes, but the Chiddush of Reb Shimon is that it means even if there's some trace of the ink left. Make meaning, sure. In other words, so you dissolve the ink, but not all of it came off, and you can still see on the parchment a vestige of the ink. That's not good enough, so you can't give her to drink unless it's completely dissolved. So all of the ink has to be dissolved. That's what we learned in the previous parak, that you have to use ink that doesn't contain kankantone, because we said we're going to learn this tomorrow, Bez Hashem, that kankantone, when you put it in ink, prevents it from being dissolved completely. So therefore that wouldn't work. You need the type of ink that's mentioned in a few places in Shas and that the Rambam mentions, that's made basically of soot in a base of oil, and that kind, when you put it in water, it will come off completely and dissolve into the water.
So even if there's a little left over,
no good. So that's what Reb Shimon means when he says that erasing the Megillah is ma'akiv, that without erasing the Megillah, you can't go ahead. That means it needs to be completely erased, the ink needs to be completely dissolved. Then we said the third one was Adshle to Kabbalah le'ashvua. We say also it has to be that she accepted on her shvua, that she accepted the shvua on herself. Well, the Gemara says mishta hu d'le'shtasya. Well, the implication of what Reb Shimon is saying is that if she didn't accept the shvua, then she's not drinking yet. Homichtav kasvila. The implication, though, seems to be that we do go ahead and write the Megillah for her. Mishta means to drink. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So mishta hu d'le'shtasya. So the implication seems to be that indeed she won't drink. But the implication seems to be that we would write the Megillah for her. But how can that be? Rava says that if you wrote them in the previous parak, we learned that if you wrote the Megillah Sota before she accepted on the Shavua on herself, then what he did doesn't count for anything. The Megillah can be written only after she accepted the Shavua. To prevent Hashem's name from being written for nothing, but Rava had said that since it says v'shbia and then v'kosav, so it has to be in that order. So how is it possible to even be giving her to drink before she accepted the shvua? So you're right. The Gemara says kedinasva. You're right. Reb Shimon is mentioning that unnecessarily. It's true by definition. The writing is going to be done only after the shvua. So when Reb Shimon says there are three things that are ma'akev, it's true. He didn't really need to mention the third one. By definition, it's going to be beforehand anyway. But the other two, he's saying, he's not actually learning from. I mean, he's saying that the pasuk v'hishka is teaching us that that all the ma'isim mentioned before in the Pesukim have to be mentioned, and then he lists those ma'isim, it's true that one of them, the Shavua, he didn't need to mention. But all the other ma'isim that conceivably could have been done after writing the Megillah, after any of the other ma'isim that could conceivably have been done before you give her the drink, Reb Shimon is saying that they all have to be done, in fact, before that.
Kedi
nasva. Kedi means for nothing. Nasva means he took it. So he took the statement. In other words, he said the statement for nothing. Itaka wasn't necessary to mention it. But once he's mentioning the other things, he mentioned it as well.
It's the word
Nasa. It's Aramaic. Nasa means to take in Aramaic. So the Gemara says, B'mai k'mifim. So now, what is the underlying machloikas between the Chachamim and Reb Shimon? So according to Rashi, the question is on the Chachamim versus Reb Shimon in the Mishnah, because again, according to Rashi, Reb Akiva is not arguing with Reb Shimon in the Braisa, so therefore we don't really need to focus on what he versus Reb Shimon is saying. All they're doing at most is they're saying we douse in the Pesukim a little differently. According to Tosfos, that Reb Akiva agrees with the Chachamim, then the question would be, what are Reb Akiva and Reb Shimon and the other Chachamim and Reb Shimon disagreeing on? What's the fundamental machlokes? So the Gemara says, Tlosa Kroy Ksipi. It's like this. You have three psukim with three times it mentions in the psukim that he gives her to drink. Vehishka Kama. There's the first time it says Vehishka, which is before anything, which is before much has taken place yet. It just says that the Kohen writes the Kohen writes these curses and dissolves the ink into the water. Then Vehishka. Then you have where he brings the Kohen Mincha. And then it says va'achal yashke, and then in the next pasuk it says v'hishka. It says v'hishka, and we're calling that v'hishka basra, the second v'hishka. Basra means the last one. In this case, it's the last time it says the concept of have giving her to drink, but it's the second time where it says v'hishka. But yeah, the word basra means the last
first
one.
Time you can just say that's just give me a breakdown of the seder.
Ah, so that's what Tosfos had said. That's why Tosfos had learned that. Now, the Braisa was when Rabbi Akiva started saying Vihishka Matam Alaymer, he is referring to the last one because you could say the first one is Lagufa, is just to tell us the concept that there's going to be a drink. Yeah. Rashi had learned differently. Rashi had said that the question was actually on the first Vihishka. Anyway, so we have three times. We need to darshan all three of them. So, like this Rabbanan Sari, so the Chachamim learn like this. Vehishka kama legufoi, exactly that. The first vehishka is just legufoi. It's needed for the simple meaning. Shemashka v'achakach makav v'smenchasa. And it tells us that the drinking takes place before he brings the mincha. So, because after all, that's the order in the pasuk. He dissolves the water. He dissolves the ink. Then he gives her to drink. Then, only afterwards, does he describe what he does with the mincha. So the Chacham is saying that first vehishka is teaching us just the order of things. The va'acha yashka they're learning, like we just said before, that Rav Shimon learns from a different one, that it means that if any trace of the ink is left, then that's no good. The Chum agree with that concept, but Rav Shimon had learned that from the word vehishka, and the Chum are learning it from va'acha yashka. Because again, the Chachamim are saying that so Rashi explains like this: since after all, it is true that it says va'achal yashke, and that would imply that should take place that the mincha that the drinking should take place after the mincha. Nevertheless, it is referring, since it said the first vehishka before bringing the mincha, then the Chum are understanding that's the primary one. That's the one that's meant legufoy, and the other ones are meant for a drasha. So therefore, even when it says va'achal yashke, it means it's actually taking place before the offering of the mincha. It means va'achal, it means after we had dissolved it. So from that, we learn that it has to be completely dissolved. And if it wasn't, then it's no good and you have to work on dissolving it completely. So that's the va'achal yashke. Vihishka basra, and then the Chachamim say, from the last vihishka, we learn, as we said before, she nimcha the Megillah, that if the Megillah has been dissolved, va'imeres eni shoysen, she says, I won't drink, but she doesn't say, I'm tomei, ma'ar renoiso, mashko isabal kocha, then we pour it down her throat, we pour it down her throat against her will. So that's how the Chachamim learn the three vihishkas. V'Rab Shimon saw, V'Rab Shimon learns differently, va'achal yashke legufoi. He says no. The va'achal yashke implies that it has to be in that order. That it has to be after you bring the mincha. Do you do the drinking? Shemashka v'achal. So therefore, shemashka v'smenchasa v'achakach mashka. First, he has to offer the mincha. Then he gives her the drink. Then Reb Shimon says vehishka kama, the first vehishka, which is not telling us the order of things, because according to him, va'achal yashka is telling us that. Rather, the first vehishka teaches us she'im hishka va'achaka chikru v'sminchasa, that if b'diyevet, as we said in the Mishnah, he did things out of order, he first gave her the drink and then offered the mincha, k'sheira, then b'diyevet would be kosher. Vehishka basra, he learns, and like the Chachamim, she nimcha ka Megillah, that if the Megillah has been dissolved, va'omer eni shoysa, and now she says, I don't want to drink, ma'ar renoysa, mashka noysa, ba'al kocha, then we force her to drink, and then we pour it down her throat. So the Shimon says, therefore, the order is, the first Vehishka teaches us if he gave her to drink ahead of time, the second one teaches us the proper order of doing things, and the third one teaches us ba'al kocha. The Chum are saying the first one is teaching us the order of things. The second one is teaching us that it has to be completely dissolved. And the third one is teaching us that if she doesn't want her, that if she doesn't want to drink, then we force her. So the Gemara says, Rabbanan. Now, why do the Chachamim not want to learn the mission? Not want to learn the Psukim like Reb Shimon? Because they say b'di'evid like pasach. There's no reason to assume that the pasuk would begin with the b'di'evid situation. It's more logical. The Pasuk will tell us first the proper way to do things, and then the Pasuk will tell us, by the way, if you did it out of order, then it's not so bad, and you're still yotze. So therefore, they say you can't say that the first Vehishka is telling us what was done with the Eved. It has to be the first Vehishka is actually telling us the proper order, is actually telling us the proper order of things. So therefore, that first comes the drink, and then comes the mincha, which is in the following pasuk. Okay. So the Gemara asks, "V'savar Rabbi Akiva mashkin oisa ba'akarcha." Now, so Rashi explains that after all, you do have. So after all, it comes out that there is a little bit of a machloikus between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon. Before, Rashi learned that Rabbi Akiva is basically holding like Rabbi Shimon as far as the order of things. That first comes the mincha, then comes the drink. But here, Rashi says now what we find is Rabbi Akiva would not agree that there's a bedieved. Rabbi Akiva would not agree that if you bedieved did it out of order, that it would be kosher. So you have the Chachamim are saying the proper order is you have to do it in the order first drink, then mincha. Reb Shimon is saying you're supposed to do mincha first, then drink, but if you did the drink first, then bedieved, it's kosher. Rabbi Akiva would disagree with that last point because he's saying that the Vehishka is teaching us that it's Baal Korcha. And again, like Rashi had said before, even if they wrote the Megillah out of order, even if they wrote it before they were supposed to, the Va'achal Yashka would teach us Rishumay Nikr, that if there's any trace of the writing left, then you have to erase it completely. And the Behishka Basra would tell us about the order in which it's supposed to be done. So he wouldn't have any available to teach us about Bidyevin. So that would be the machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva. Again, according to Tosfos, that Rabbi Akiva holds, according to the Chachamim, then you have a much bigger machlokes between them because the Chachamim hold that you have to do it in the order, drinking, then mincha. And Rabbi Shimon says, you could do it in that order, but the proper way is to do it the other way around.
The Chachamim don't give you an option.
The Chachamim apparently don't give you an option, right? Okay, so the Gemara asked, "V'savar Rabbi Akiva mashkin oisa ba'al kocha." So you're telling me that Rabbi Akiva holds that you force her to drink? V'hotanya, we learn in a brisa. Rabbi Yehuda says, "How do we force? So how do we if we have to pour the water into her throat, then how do we keep her mouth open for that?" So Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a kalbus shabaus amatil nosach pia. We put into her mouth a kalbus made of iron, which is Rashi describes. It's almost like a pliers. It has two teeth. It's not really like a pliers. It's like a stick that has sharp points at both ends. You put it into her mouth in such a way that if she tries to bite down, it's going to hurt her. So that'll force her mouth to stay open. And shem nimcham kemegillah, the purpose being that if the Megillah has been erased, but omra any shosa, now she says, "I don't want to drink." Ma'ara noisa, mashka noisa, bal kofa. Then we force her to drink it. So Rabbi Yehuda holds that's how you keep her mouth open. Tosfos, by the way, mentions that in when it comes to misas beistin, we know that Srefa also involves the Misa of Srefa also involves putting something down the person's throat, hot lead. And there you have actually the Tanakama there says that they force his mouth open by tying a scarf around his neck, and the Edom start pulling in both directions, with the idea being that it kind of forces the person to gasp for breath, and then their mouth is open. Reb Shimon, meanwhile, Reb Yehuda disagrees over there and says that won't work. What if they accidentally choke him and then they haven't done the mitzvah of Srefa? Rather, Reb Yehuda says you force his mouth open with pliers. So now the question is, so why over here is Reb Yehuda saying to use a kalbus instead of pliers? So Tosfos answers, actually, you need both. You start by opening her mouth with pliers, but then in order to force her to drink it. But then once it's already open, she might close it again. So you stick in the kalbus to prevent her from closing it. So meanwhile, the Chachamim would say differently over there. That the Tosfos says that over there, the Chachamim are saying that given that anyway the person is being put to death with Mrs. Bastin, then they start the process. In effect, they do like a miniature chenek to him, and then they finish off with Srefa. Here, she's not being executed, so therefore the Chachamim are not going to say that you use scarves around her neck at all. Therefore, there has to be some other way of opening her mouth to force her to drink it and holding it open. Anyway. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you do that. You force her mouth open and she has to swallow it. But in the Braiser, Omer Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva says, look, the whole purpose of giving her the salt and water is to test her out, to see whether, in fact, she's guilty. Now, if she doesn't want to drink, then in effect, she's already been tested because she doesn't want to drink. So therefore, that amounts to agreeing that she's tummy. Well, that's what you're shaking your head. That's what Gemara is going to deal with that point in a second. But yeah, on the face of it, it sounds like once she's saying I won't drink, that's tantamount to saying I'm tummy. So rather, Rabbi Akiva says it depends. Actually, Korabah Koimetz Yechodel Lachsuba, before the Koimetz has been offered on the Mizbeach, she could still change her mind. Misha Korabah Koimetz, any Yechodel Lachsuba, once the Koimetz has been offered on the Mizbeach, then Rabbi Akiva says, then she loses that option, and then we're going to force her. So it comes out. So any Yechodel Lachsuba, she can't change her mind. She can't say I won't drink. It's either she says I'm tummy or at that point so Gemara is asking that it sounds like according to Rabbi Akiva there's no reason to force her, but the Gemara says Velitai Mech, new according to your svara that you're even asking the question Tikshalach Higufa. Listen, you have a contradiction in itself. What do you mean? Rabbi Akiva is saying once the klametz has been offered, then she can't change her mind. You have the same problem. If Rabbi Akiva is saying that earlier, if she says I won't drink, then it amounts to she's already been tested. She's already failed the test. Well, the same thing is true after the koimetz. So why would Rabbi Akiva be distinguishing between before the koimetz and after it? Rather loy kasha. So we have to understand that Rabbi Akiva is not contradicting himself when he says b'duka v'emedis. When he says that if she says I won't drink, then automatically she's failed the test. It depends. Why is she saying hod kahadru machas resisa? One possibility is that she's saying that she doesn't want that she doesn't want to drink because she's trembling. So we can see that she's afraid to drink the water. So now, even if she says any shoisa, it might be. Why is she trembling? Why is she scared? Because she's afraid. What if it's true you're telling me that if I'm taher, then nothing will happen. Adraba, as we'll learn in the next parak, the water will have good effects on me. But maybe after all, it'll have some residual bad effects on me, and therefore she's afraid to drink. So saying I won't drink and trembling like that doesn't amount to saying I am tummy. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva is saying, she hasn't automatically failed the test, so therefore, therefore, we may still need to give her to drink. But when Rabbi Akiva is saying she's failed the test and there's no reason to give her to drink, that would be talking about where she's very healthy looking, she's very 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 firm, and saying I won't drink. So now, in other words, so obviously then we have every reason to assume that she is tummy, and she was always figuring I'll get away with it somehow. And now when it comes to the last moment, then she finally says any shoisa, I'm not drinking, and that's that. So then at that point, that amounts to admitting that she's tummy. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva means like this, kol machmas b'riyusa klal klal lo shasya. If when she's saying I won't drink, she's saying very firmly I won't, then we're not going to make her drink, because even if the koimetz has already been brought, then again it amounts to saying that she's tummy. So now Rabbi Yehuda would be disagreeing with that. Rabbi Yehuda would be saying once that there comes a point when we force her, even if it's machmas bar yosa, even if she's saying it very calmly. But Rabbi Akiva is saying no. If at any time she says calmly, I won't drink, then that amounts to saying I'm tummy, and that's that. And we send her off. Machmas resisa. On the other hand, if when she's saying I won't drink, she's trembling, showing that she's afraid, then it depends. Ad shalei korava koimetz. If this takes place before the koimetz is offered, and at that point da'kati lo imchuk megillah, where at that point the megillah has not been dissolved yet, because again, Rashi is learning again according to his shita before that Rabbi Akiva agrees with Reb Shimon that the drinking takes place only after the mincha was brought. And therefore, that the erasing usually would be done as close as possible to that. So only after the mincha was brought.
By struggling.
She's trembling because she's afraid of what's going to happen.
She didn't even erase the thing yet.
Right. The point is, she's still afraid of what's going to happen once she drinks. We're not talking about when she's drinking. She's afraid of what's going to happen eventually. So then, if So if it's at that point, so fine, the Megillah hasn't been erased yet. Or even you could say, if the Megillah had already been dissolved by that time, but the Kohenim had done it wrongly, they had dissolved it too early because they should have done it earlier, then Rabbi Akiva is going to say, Motzi Hadrabah, then fine, she can change her mind. She's able to say, I don't want to drink, and we're not going to force her to drink, and we're just going to say, fine, then in that case, you have to divorce her husband, your husband, etc. But Rabbi Akiva says, Mishakorba Koimetz, once the Koimetz has been offered, the Bedin Ovid Koinim the Machti, where then the Koinim acted properly at that point by erasing Hashem's name, then when Motzi Hadriba, then at that point, then we don't allow her to change her mind, and therefore that we're at that point, Rabbi Akiva agrees we're gonna force her to drink. So there is a case where Rabbi Akiva forces her to drink. But it's just unlike Rabbi Yehuda, who says there are more cases where we do. Rabbi Akiva is going to say only in this one case where she's trembling so she's scared of it, and Hashem's name has already been erased according to the proper order of things. Then at that point she loses that option. Unless she says I'm Tomei. So they want to ask Kasha the Rabbi Akiva ad Rabbi Akiva. Well, in that case, then we have a contradiction between two statements of Rabbi Akiva. Hasam Amar Mechika Ma'akva, because in the earlier Braisa he said that it's the erasing of the ink that makes it that is ma'akiv, that once that in other words, once the Megillah has been erased, then she doesn't have the option to say any shoisa anymore. But once it's been erased, then ma'arinoisa. Here he's saying that's the offering of the koimetz that makes it that now we force her, that even if she says that even though the name of Hashem has already been erased, but the koimetz hasn't been offered yet, then Rabbi Akiva is going to say that she still has that option. The Gemara answers, you're right, there are two tanoim who argue within what Rabbi Akiva says. Okay, so now the Gemara says, So in other words, it comes out that according to this last braisa, Rabbi Akiva would completely agree with Reb Shimon. Unlike we said before, that in the first braisa, Rabbi Akiva would be disagreeing with Reb Shimon about the detail. Can you do things out of order? Reb Shimon allows it, and Rabbi Akiva doesn't. In this last braisa, it comes out that Rabbi Akiva is exactly agreeing with Reb Shimon. So now we have a related question. What if she says calmly, I won't drink, without trembling, and then she changes her mind and says, you know what, I will go ahead with it after all. Now, can you give her the drink? On the one hand, given to Omra any shoisa, tmeyani kamra, once she said the first time, I won't drink, that amounts to saying, I'm tamei. And since already she's made a chazaka that she's tamei, then she can't change her mind. Therefore we're not going to allow her to drink the water because it's not going to do any good anyway. If we know she's Tomei, or if she admits she's Tomei, she doesn't drink the water. The whole point of the water is to deal with the case of Suffolk. She's claiming, I'm Tomei, I'm Toher, and we need to see whether that's in fact the case. If we know that she's Tomei, whether like at the beginning of the Masechta, we said there's an aid that she's Tomei, or she herself admits it or whatever, then you don't give her the water to begin with. So is that the case over here? Or maybe because now she says, I will drink it. Maybe that shows that to begin with, when she said, I won't drink, was because she was afraid. So even though she wasn't shaking, but nevertheless. So the Gemara says, teiku. So teiku. So therefore the result is we don't give her the drink in that case, the Rambam Paskins.
It's just divorce now.
Yeah. One more din, Omer Avor Dishmor, Sorach Shiitin Mar Lusecha Mayim. You have to put something bitter into the water. My time, the Omakram, Meham Morim, because the Posit calls it the bitter water, and that's the Rashi explains that calls it that. Shemorim Kvar, so Shemorim Kvar, it's already bitter, meaning even before he erased the Megillah into it, already it's called on the Posit Mayim Hamorim. And you can't say that it's because Morim, because it's called that, because eventually it will lead to bitter consequences for her, says Rashi, because before you erase the Megillah into it, it's not going to do that anyway. So if already there, before you even erase the scroll into it, it's already called Mayim Morim, that implies that there has to be something bitter in it. Up to that point, all you have is water from the kier and dust from the floor of the Mishkan. There's nothing bitter. Therefore, for Shmuel to say, you learn from that you also have to add some kind of bitter substance into the some kind of bitter herb or something into the water.
sure that it doesn't taste that great.
Regardless.
Without adding that string.
Right.
The dirt doesn't taste great. But anyway.
Right. And the Meiri points out, by the way, now you wouldn't that cause people to think that maybe it's the bitter herb that caused the consequences, that her their stomach swells up, etc. He says, no, come on, people realize that people realize that just drinking water mixed with bitter herb is not going to cause a person to swell up, etc. They're going to realize that it was because of the Megillah and because of Hashem's name, etc. So we'll talk about tomorrow. We'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, talking about what happens as we'll continue with this topic of what happens if she says, I don't want to drink the water, and then what the consequences are if in fact she's taught me. And we'll get into a whole piece of Agadah related to that. Okay, everyone.